Ladies and gentlemen, good evening and thank you for tuning in to our Thursday night programming of Totally Driven Radio. Heh, but why wouldn't you tune into the greatest show heard all around the world?
Thursday to you and yours. Bay Ragney here, Totally Driven Radio. That's right, it's Totally Driven Thursday, and normally I'd say we are live, but guess what? We're not. We are taped. We're Memorex tonight, that's right. We're, well, what actually would be Memorex in this digital world? Is Memorex even still a thing? I bet you're Googling that right now, aren't you? Because after I'm done, I'm going to be Googling it. But anyway, so I got a show lined up for you tonight. Got a couple interviews I've done this past week that it's now time to share with you. So let's do it. We got two guests, two interviews, and we got first up, we have actress Rebecca Metz. Rebecca, she's starred in a lot of things. She's been in episodes of Grey's Anatomy, Lopez. She's been on Bones, Shameless, Major Crimes, Criminal Minds, The Mindy Project. I mean, the list goes on and on. She's currently got roles on two TV shows, one on FX Network called Better Things, which is a super cool and funny show. Check it out if you're into, like, comedy. Real life comedy, slight drama, but more comedy. I think you would check it out. It's a really cool show. And she's also on the Disney Channel. She plays a mom on Coop and Cammy Ask the World. So she's got two shows going on. She's got a movie coming out on the Disney, probably Disney streaming service later this year. A bunch of things. So we talk about her her career in acting, how she got started. Her number one influence when she was a child was none other than The Muppets, which is kind of cool. So we talk about the love of The Muppets and much, much more. And then coming up after Rebecca, we have, he's my new friend. I like this, you know. From time to time, I do these interviews with people, and sometimes they end up flipping the script and opening up Google and typing in my name and see, you know, what kind of show they're getting involved in, who's doing the interview, et cetera, et cetera. And he came across the fact that I was former ECW original Dudley boy, Chubby Dudley. So we're going to show him extra special love tonight. His name's Norman Matthew. He's the former frontman of Murder FM, and he's the current, you know, he's more than the frontman. He's the man about the pro project. He's got a music school as well we talk about, but the project is called As Strange as Angels. They have a new EP out called Mirror Mirror with the title track single, which is like doing blow away tremendously amazing on Billboard charts. So we're also going to play the single Mirror Mirror as well at the end of the interview. So make sure you tune in for that and crank it up. It's a cool tune. It's like a beautiful tune. It's like a tune that's like when I listen to it, I, honest to God, at parts it like I can feel it in the pit of my stomach, and then it kicks in. It's one of them good ones. So make sure you check it out. But anyway, so that's going to be up second. So let's get into the first interview. Without further ado, you're tired of hearing me babble. Let's go. Here she is, the one and only Rebecca Metz.
Is this Rebecca Metz?
Yes, it is.
Is this the Jersey girl, Rebecca Metz?
Yes, it is.
How you doing, Rebecca?
I'm good. How are you? There's only one.
There's only one.
Exactly.
So
there's only one. That's actually not true. There are a couple.
Were you one of them high-haired Jersey girls?
No. I was once in a musical where we had to make my hair really big, and, like, it was so big that my hair dryer exploded in my hand, and I couldn't fit through doorways. So, like, I proved that I was capable of that, but that was not my style.
Oh, that's
but I went to school with them. I got a yearbook full of them.
I'm sure. I'm quite sure. So being from Freehold, New Jersey, that the home of the Boss, I mean, is it mandatory to
yes.
be a Springsteen fan?
You know, I never felt pressured, and I probably came to it a little late out of just, like, resistance of being the stereotype, but, you know, it's hard. It's hard not to be proud. Like, that's it. I just appreciate that you know that he's from Freehold, because a lot of people think he's from Asbury Park, and we Freeholders get very upset about that.
You feel a little slighted, I'm sure.
Yeah, just offend it. Like, my high school teachers failed him. That's
really?
Like something to brag about. Yeah, yeah. A lot of our teachers had stories about Bruce Springsteen, and that, like, the only thing he ever got an A in was an oral report on how to play the guitar.
Oh, that's awesome. That just goes with the folklore, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's too funny. So you, I mean, actually, your parents classically trained singers, and I was like, were you wanting to just be a singer at first, or was, like, the whole acting angle in your sights the whole time?
I mean, I kind of started out, like, I took piano lessons as a kid, and I was good at music because I think I was around it all the time, and I was, like, in choir and all that stuff. But from a pretty early age, I was kind of leaning towards more of the acting side. I think, like, growing up and having the arts around me made that seem not so strange. So, you know,
sure.
I was, like, encouraged to pursue it. But try as they might, my parents never managed to make me a classical music fan.
That's pretty, that's impressive right there, because you would think they'd really kind of, you know, push you in that direction.
Yeah, well, you know, kids, like, whatever your parents want you to do, you're going to run in the other direction.
But, or maybe it was the fact that, like, that the Muppets had such a huge influence on you that they knew the direction.
Yeah, well, also, I mean, between the Muppets and, like, the only records my parents had in the house that were not classical records were Beatles records, and so I listened to a lot of Beatles music, and the Muppets did a lot of Beatles music, and so I guess, you know, I was turned in a more rock and roll direction from an early age. But, yeah, you know, we have the Muppets to thank for some of that.
Who was your favorite Muppet?
Oh, it really depends. I always loved Zoot, who was the saxophone player in the band. He didn't ever say much, but he was blue, and he just blew that saxophone. I loved him. He was super cool, I thought.
I was a Fozzie Bear fan myself.
Oh, yes. I mean, how can you not be? Like, yeah, he's in sort of the core. And Scooter. I really liked Scooter. I liked the sort of stage manager, like, type A organizer personality.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
I mean, those shows were so classic.
They were. I have some friends, and I used to watch them in high school. Like, we would go to Blockbuster and get VHS tapes of old Muppet Show sketches, and we would watch them. And they were funny. Like, they were raunchy, and they had all kind of drugs jokes in them. And I was like, I told my parents, like, I can't believe you let me watch this. And my dad was like, well, why did you think I watched it with you? It wasn't, like, for your benefit. I was like, oh, okay.
Now you're making me want to go back and have to watch that to get those jokes.
You should. It is, like, a completely different experience as an adult, and it's so good. And you can see, like, that they were cracking themselves up.
This is, like, a new mission. I'll have to watch it with my daughters and see if they get the jokes.
If I can be responsible for driving some people back to the Muppet Show, I will have accomplished something in our society.
Now, you ended up going to the Carnegie Mellon School of Drama, and like, yeah. How did you going there from being the Jersey girl?
I, like, speaking of type A, in eighth grade, I would go to the library. Like, I knew I wanted to go to school for acting, and I went to the local library, and I did all this research on the best acting schools, and I decided I was going to Carnegie Mellon. And my parents, I think, were just excited that I was, like, enthusiastic about college. So they took me to campus, and we went on a tour, and we met, you know, somebody from the School of Drama, and I was like, I'm coming here, and, you know, it's a good school. My dad was excited I wanted to go to a good school. And 4 years later, I mean, that's just kind of what happened. Like, I kind of set my sights on it, and I was all set to go to NYU because it was closer and I had friends going there, but I got into Carnegie Mellon, and that was just, it just seemed kind of like the thing I had always been heading towards. So I decided early I was going to end up there, and I'm lucky they agreed with me.
they greeted you with open arms.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, do you do a lot of theater still, or?
Not lately. When I first got to LA, I did a lot of small local theater, a lot for years. And, you know, as I started working more in television, it's hard because they're not really compatible schedule-wise. Like, if you do a play, you're kind of booked out for several months at a time, and my agents don't like me to do that, and it doesn't pay as well as television. So I haven't been able to, but I've done, like, readings here and there just because I love to get up in front of an audience still. I think there's nothing like a live audience. But, you know, I've been lucky enough to be working pretty consistently in television, which means I haven't been able to have the, like, chunk of time you need to do theater. But that is on the list of something to get back to as soon as I can.
Yeah, it's like a blessing in disguise almost.
It is. I mean, it, you know, most actors, and I was this way for a long time, it's just constantly struggling to get any work, never mind enough work to sustain yourself. And then once you are working consistently, it's like, now the problem is that you have to say no to things that you really want to do. And it's like, you know, if other actors hear you complaining about that, they'll want to punch you in the face. But it's a real, it's a real thing. It hurts not to be able to do stuff. But I'm very lucky and grateful to be working and working on stuff that I love.
I'll tell you what, like, I was going through and I was watching the clips on your website and all, and I was like, especially the one that when you were on Grey's Anatomy, and I love that freaking show. I watch it every week.
Uh-huh.
And when I watched the clip, I was like, first off, I remembered it. And I was like, in the minute 30 second clip, I went from instantly hating your character to sitting there in tears because I was so moved. It was like such a quick role reversal, and it was done so well. I was like, wow, it was so meaningful.
Thank you. That was really fun. I mean, that show is like, there's a few shows that you just like, you want to get them on your resume because you feel like you're part of kind of an important moment in television. That show's been on for what, 15 seasons or something. And that was my first Shonda Rhimes show. So I was really excited to get to work on that. And it's like, you know, they have huge guest cast of people kind of coming in and out every week, but the writing and direction is so good that you get to make a turn like that. Those are like really great, juicy parts to get to do.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you didn't hate me the whole time.
No. now how about, working on the Lopez show? What's it like working with George Lopez?
Oh, he was great. I mean, you know, he's so funny. Like, you just kind of get out of his way and let him run the show. And his, you know, he had Haley Huntley, who played his manager on the show. She's awesome. And he just surrounded himself with wonderful people. So I had a great time working on that show.
That's awesome. Yeah. It kind of seems like he just like can go off on tangents and just, you know, ad lib and do his thing.
Oh yeah. I mean, he is obviously like a consummate performer. So you just feel like you're in good hands and let George do what George is going to do. And my job is just to kind of like keep the ball in the air.
Now you're really having a lot of success with Better Things on the FX channel. Mm-hmm. How did this whole thing you end up happening, getting hooked up with, you know, Pamela Adlin and Louis C.K. and.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, I heard about that show. I've been a huge fan of Pam's forever. And I heard about that show when FX announced it, and I
I do this periodically. I'll reach out to my agent and sort of say, like, let's keep an eye on this one. I want to see what's going on with this one. And I ended up getting called in. The casting director, and she's now a producer on the show, Felicia Pisano, is someone who has called me in over the years for all kinds of projects. So I went in on it. And she and Pam are friends and have been for a long time through Californication, I think. And Felicia just has a really good feel for actors Pam will like. And so that's what happened, is I just went to this audition where everyone there kind of read the same thing. And it was just about Pam finding actors she wanted to work with. And so I got a call where they basically were like, you're on the show. We don't know who you're going to be. We don't have any scripts yet, but we'll let you know. And I was originally booked for one day playing Tressa, her manager. And then that kind of evolved pretty quickly into the character being kind of like incorporated into the friend group. And yeah, and I've been with it for three seasons, and it's just totally wonderful. It's like I wandered into the perfect project for me, which is a nice feeling.
Now, I mean, that's gonna be pretty wild though, because how many times have you seen, like, you know, through our lives of watching television, where you see like that character gets that small role, and people just, mm-hmm. I mean, the way I always looked at it was people fell in love with that character, and that's what brings them back more and more.
Yeah, I mean, and as an actor, you hear those stories, and you're like, oh, I wonder if that'll ever happen to me. But when it happens, it's not that you tried harder, or it's just sort of a natural fit. You find your kind of people who get you and get what you're doing in your work. And, like, hopefully over the course of a career, that's what you're doing, is finding your way to the people who appreciate what you do so that you end up in the right places for you. So I will be endlessly grateful to Felicia for bringing me in on that and for knowing that Pam and I would click.
Now, I got to ask you if you know this or not. Is Pam's character, Sam Fox, did she name her like after the British star Samantha Fox?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think so. We've never talked about that. I think it was like, I've always assumed that it was because Sam and Pam were close. I don't know.
Gotcha.
That's a good question.
Okay. That was the first thing that popped in my head when I was seeing it. And I went and watched a few episodes, and I'm like, I wonder if that's where she took the name from.
Interesting. I will ask her next time I see her.
Now, something with that show, and I think with television in general too, I mean, it's kind of just like a really exciting time in TV right now, where you got shows like that are able to be, you know, like super realistic. You know what I mean? Like they're showing the true things
yeah.
that are happening in people's lives, and they're able to cross them boundaries, but, you know, done right and tastefully, where it needs to be done, not overdone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think, you know, there's some genres of television that are all about like big things happening in the plot, explosions and people double crossing each other and, you know,
right.
stuff like big surprises, and that there's nothing wrong with that. And that can be really exciting. But, you know, Better Things is a show that is very grounded in real life. All of these people feel like people that you know and relationships that you have. And it's, you know, very much about like moments in our lives that are usually private that we never get to find out if anybody else is having those moments. And then,
right.
You know, you see it on the show and go, oh my God, I've done that. I've felt that. My kid has said that to me. And it just feels very intimate, which is a different kind of vibe. You know, the show it's not about like a sequence of plot events where if you miss one episode, you're going to be lost. It's just about
right.
the way
right.
life unfolds in a very truthful way, which, you know, I'm glad there's a place in television for that too.
Yeah. And it seems there's a lot more places, more and more for that, those types of shows in television.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, there's room for both. I was going to say I like that better, but I watched Game of Thrones, so I like both of those things.
Now, on the flip side, you're also on the Disney Channel with Coop and Cammy
uh-huh.
as the world. Like,
yeah.
It's funny because a lot of your roles are more of the funny, sarcastic person, and then you're
yep.
the mom
yeah.
of the Disney Channel.
Yeah, there's a little bit of her. I mean, there's a little bit of that in her. When I auditioned for that, oh, my cat's here. You might hear some meowing. Sorry about that. Be quiet. there's a little bit of, when I got the audition, I was sort of like a Disney Channel mom. Like, I'm not what I think of as a Disney Channel mom. And then
right.
I sort of read it, and there was a little, you know, sarcasm and snark to her. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to do this in a way that feels true to me. And if that's what they want, then great. And I actually get to be not sarcastic. It's a different version. It's a, you know, Disney family appropriate version of a lot of the things that I get to do on other characters I play, like on Shameless and things. But she's a very real mom. She gets mad at her kids sometimes. She gets tired. She gets cranky. She gets exasperated. It's all always rooted in love, of course. But, you know, I think she is very relatable to actual moms and parents. And I've heard from a lot of moms and parents who are like, oh, I love this character because she doesn't make me feel bad for not being perfect. You know? And it's really fun to play someone who's trying her best to be a perfect mom, but failing, because, you know, that's kind of what we all do.
Sure. Now, how about the kids? I mean, you hear all the stories all the times of, you know, mothers on TV mm-hmm. shows literally becoming like the second mother to their children on the TV show. Do you kind of feel like that's what's happening on the set there?
I don't think I'm their second mother. They all have wonderful parents and guardians on set who do a very good job of taking care of them, so I don't have to. And I'm not a mom myself, so, like, I don't have very strong mom tendencies. I think I'm a little bit of a, not an acting teacher, but I've given them some acting tips. And they're, like, these kids are so mature. And, like, we're doing the same job. They have full-time acting jobs just like I do. It's incredible to me that they can pull that off. And so I think, you know, I'm teaching them some stuff, they're teaching me some stuff, and it's kind of fun to hang out with a bunch of kids. Don't let my parents hear me say that, but it's true.
Now, when you negotiated the contract with Disney for this, did you like put in there like a clause that they need to, because don't they own the Muppets, so can't they make a Muppet movie and have you in it now?
We didn't put anything in the contract, but I have made it clear that if there's any Muppet anything happening in the company, I want in, and I will probably camp out outside whoever's office is working on it. And so they should just let me do it to, like, spare anybody any embarrassment. So I think everybody understands.
Yeah, I think that would be, like, the perfect way to, you know, take it to the next level. The Muppets, the reason that you started in this business.
Yeah, I would have to work really hard to, like, stay composed and not act like a crazy fangirl. But I think I could. I think I'm professional enough at this point that I could keep it together.
Now, you have a film coming out too for Disney, Magic Camp.
Yeah, yeah. We shot it a few years ago, and so, like, it's going to be really great to see it again. It's I believe it is coming out as part of Disney's streaming service, Disney Plus, which is supposed to come out or supposed to launch in 2019. It is about a magic camp, like Rabbit Out of the Hat magic, not Harry Potter magic. And I play the mom of one of the campers, and they do amazing magic in this movie. Like, I won't reveal anything, but we were there for some of the magic they were performing, and we watched it over and over again, because that's what you do when you're filming a movie. And I still couldn't figure out how they were doing those tricks. It's really great and a really sweet movie.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, the whole this Disney streaming thing, this thing's going to be, like, huge.
Yeah, it's going to be a game changer. I think it's going to be massive. And I mean, Disney's already massive and they just keep growing, so it's kind of hard to wrap your head around how it's going to get bigger, but it is.
I know. They just keep buying everything.
Yeah, they kind of do. FX, or Better Things is an FX show, and Disney now owns FX. So I was like, oh, well, I guess I'm on two Disney shows now. I didn't even mean to do that.
Oh, wow. I didn't even realize that. So they really got their claws in you then.
They really do. Yeah, I'm never getting out.
Oh, but that's not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing. I mean, it's, you know, as companies to work for go, Disney is pretty high on the list for most people. So yeah, I am happy to be employed by the mouse.
The mouse signs the checks.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's funny. So anything else you have working on under your hat or anything? Cause you're getting ready to come out, or?
There's one other thing that I'm not allowed to talk about yet. So that's exciting. I need to keep checking and see when I'm allowed to say it. But you know, right now we're shooting Coop and Cammy season 2, Better Things season 3 just wrapped and is available on FX now. And it's already picked up for season 4, and we will start shooting that in the fall. So, like, I've got work lined up for a while, which is a good place to be for an actor.
Now, for season 4, are you going to have like a bigger role? Because it seems like your role has grown each season.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I would love to. I mean, one of the problems Pam has at this point is that all the recurring characters on her show got series of their own, which I think has something to do with her and the success of Better Things. But it can be tough to schedule. So I think a lot of it just has to do with when she can get everyone. But hopefully, I would love for my role to keep growing, obviously, because I love the show and everyone on it, which is true. Rare to be able to say, but true. So I hope so. Fingers crossed.
See, now they need to give you a spinoff, and they can show the workings of all your different clients that you're managing.
Right? I agree with you. We should pitch that to FX together. Hey, John Landgraf, are you listening to this? Let's do that. We'll do Tressa.
Yeah.
Tressa's world.
I mean, seriously, imagine the freak show world you could show with all the different people you'd be managing.
People would not believe it. People would not believe it. You could do a show about making like a kid's multi-camera show, like the Disney Channel show. People are fascinated by child actors, I have learned. And all kinds of crazy assumptions and questions about what child actors are like. So we could do a show about that.
Child actors and dealing with the parents and yeah.
Yeah. We're lucky. We have really good, like, people are always telling us, you guys are on a really good Disney show. You should consider yourselves lucky. Everybody's really nice. And I don't want to know what the other shows are like. So I'm just going to stick with the one that we're on and not ask any questions.
That sounds frightening.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure it can be.
Oh, boy. Well, Rebecca, where should we send everybody to keep up to date on all your happenings, new seasons, new TV shows, movies, et cetera, et cetera?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at TheRebeccaMetz, M-E-T-Z, like the baseball team, but with a Z, in both of those places. And those are the only, and I guess I'm on Facebook too, but is anybody on Facebook anymore, really?
Oh, don't tell me that.
I shouldn't say that.
Please.
Twitter and Instagram. Oh. Disney doesn't care about Facebook.
You know what? Everybody I talk to anymore, it's all about Instagram.
I know. I like it there. It's harder to get in fights.
If you try hard enough, you can get in the fights there too.
It's true. I'm not trying very hard. That is fair. I just, I follow lots of like adorable cat and animal rescue accounts. So my Instagram is a very nice place. So come find me on Instagram.
I literally just started an Instagram account for my bulldog last week.
See? So many of them. And we've got lots of animal lovers on the Disney set, so we're always talking about, like, different pit bulls that we found that do wacky things. And, yeah, it's all animals. Your dog is going to be an Instagram celebrity in no time.
Yeah, he'll probably get more follows than I do at some point.
Yeah, probably. That's okay. You can ride his coattails.
Exactly. Well, Rebecca, thanks for making this happen. Congrats on everything, and I'm looking forward to more big things from you.
Thank you so much. It was great talking with you. Have a great rest of the night.
You too. Come back to Jersey soon, even though I'm in Philly, but, Jersey will miss you.
Yeah. Well, I'll get back as soon as I can.
Just avoid those circles. I hate Jersey with the circles.
I'm used to them. I like them. That's how I grew up. Seems normal to me, but I understand. They're bizarre.
Yeah, they are.
Say hi to Philly for me.
I will. Thanks again so much. Take care.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, welcome back to Television Radio. Bay Ragney here, and there she goes, Rebecca Metz. Make sure you look for her on the, the worlds of, like, Instagram and Twitter at The Rebecca Metz. And just Google her, or you can go to her website, you can see a lot of clips of stuff she's been in, but check out the stuff she's on, because she's funny and an amazing actress. So check her out. Show her some love, show her some support, because she is truly totally driven. Which, speaking of the fact of being totally driven, here's our next guest, Mr. Norman Matthew, as Strange as Angels. And you're going to hear a story of how, starting over
and starting over in life, business, music, everything. So he as well is truly the definition of totally driven. So let's give it up for Mr. Norman Matthew.
Norman.
How you doing?
Dude, so I got to ask the number one question. What the hell is it like working with Tommy Lee?
Awesome, actually. surreal, to be perfectly honest, the way that it came together. But he's one of the coolest dudes ever, man. I worked with him when we were Murder FM. And we were working on a track called We the Evil that we remixed. And, dude, it was just awesome, man. He's such a nice dude. I was going through a divorce at the time. And he actually coached me through a lot of it.
Well, I guess he's a professional in that area, too.
Yeah, no, right? It was crazy, man. He would call in and check on me, and we used this app called Boxer, and we would talk back and forth, and it was just super cool, man. And we've stayed friends since, actually.
Oh, that's cool.
But it was crazy. I remember putting a chair on top of my mom's bed, when I was 5 years old, and pretending it was a drum riser, and I was jamming out to Shout at the Devil. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's awesome. That's freaking awesome. So now I saw too, with Morris, was that that you guys were picking up, or was there other reasons? Or
what's that? I'm sorry, man. You got kind of broken up again.
The Murder FM was a big part of the reason you guys broke up. Was going through the divorce, or was it other issues, or?
Yeah, no, I mean, Murder FM was, it was tricky, man. We had done very well in the underground scene for quite some time, man. We had really, done a lot of the ditch digging and the grunt work as far as an independent band is concerned. And we were doing arenas with Five Finger Death Punch and Deftones and Rob Zombie and Korn. And it was just, we were on this little trajectory, man. But
right.
By the time we got our deal and we'd already released some stuff independently, I mean, a lot of us, we started as kids in a band. The four of us had a car payment, and we came out on the back end with, mortgages and, children. And it was just, we had been working it. And I don't know if you're familiar with a band called At the Drive-In. That's also from where I'm from, El Paso. And those dudes turned into Sparta and Mars Volta. But for them, okay. It was kind of the same thing, They signed a Grand Royal with Beastie Boys, and they did that one record with Ross Robinson and kind of tapped out. And that's where we were as well. You spend 7-8 years trying to build something, and then by the time you get there, it's kind of what's left to do? And the divorce was another thing, though, too, man. I wanted to focus on being super dad, and I didn't, I couldn't be on the road at the time. I didn't want to be on the road. It was just a different time and a different place, and I needed to really, focus in on the most important stuff, which was my little boy. So it was just a culmination of things that just kind of brought that to an end for me.
Yeah, it sounds like it all kind of happened that as sad it was as it is or was for both parts, whether the breakup of the band or your marriage, it kind of happened all at the right time to really reevaluate things and put things in perspective and start afresh, on both parts of your life.
Absolutely, man. You know what? It was the best way I can explain it to anybody is it was like taking a brick to your face and having to completely rebuild your face. I mean, it all happened at one time. And, it was unfortunate, with Murder FM, we had done so well. And those dudes were, some of my best friends. We had seen so much and grown in our lives so much together. But I was just, we were going to need to make a change as a band as it was, because we had been doing it for so long up to that point that it was if we wanted to transcend that glass ceiling, we were going to have to make a change, in a way that a band AFI went from being a fire inside to AFI. I was like, we might have to rebrand or change our sound a little, or we're wearing black all the time, let's wear all white or something. It was time for change there. It was time for, changed my life. And it was just like a planetary slingshot really just kind of made you go, well, let's just start from scratch all the way from the bottom, And it was really scary, man. I mean, I've been playing music since I was 6 years old. I have my brother who used to be the touring guitarist for John Fogerty. We have a cousin who's in a country band, the Rascal Flatts, and like music's just kind of the family biz. And when I stopped doing my own music for a while, it was also, you know, a shot to my own like personal identity. Like other than being dad, like I didn't know who I was. You know what I mean? I'm like, well, sure. What do I do with my time? What do I like? What do I not like? I didn't even listen to music for a little bit other than I own a music school and I would like teach people and write for artists or whatever, but I would get in my car and I didn't, you know, I would turn on like podcasts or something. You know what I mean? It was like, I was like that, that guy in those new insurance commercials where it's like, wow, he bought a house and he turned into his dad. Like, you know what I mean? That was me. It was like, I didn't recognize, I mean, a lot of myself, you know, it was like, wow, this is just like really different, you know? But along the way, I started to embrace it. I'm like, this is exactly what I needed. I needed that fresh start. I needed to get away from it for a little bit. I needed to reexamine myself. I needed my music to parallel where my life was at, you know? And for someone like Rob Zombie or Korn, you know, they're the lucky ones, man. Manson, they're super driven. I mean, they're super character driven. So they can still have that element of character to what they were doing, and Murder FM was as well, but we weren't able to get as big as those bands, you know? So in that regard, it was like, well, you can't keep trying. It obviously isn't working to that level, so you got to do something else. So it forced me to really bring a lot of my personal feelings and my personal life and, you know, just a lot of reality, you know, into my music, which ended up being real cool, you know what I mean? It was like, yeah, let's grow the hair out. Let's, you know, with mohawks all the time. I'm like, I physically changed. I lost 30 pounds, you know? It was like, let's just physically evolve, mentally evolve, spiritually evolve, and at least if I'm going to try it again one more time, I'm offering something new to the world rather than trying to get you to buy into my same old tricks. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's like, hey, new circus, but it's a different name, but all the same stuff. I'm like, why don't we change all the stuff inside? You know what I mean? So that's where it started for me.
You know, you brought up a point there, and I kind of think, like, what part was scarier? Like, the fact that you came to the reality of, like, what Murder FM was doing, just, you know, it worked to a point, but wasn't going to get you to, like, that Rob Zombie level, or the fact that, like, you had to start completely fresh over?
Start over?
That you had to start, yeah, like, which one was, like, a scarier reality for you?
Probably starting over, because I've always tried to be real honest with myself as far as like the music and the stuff it goes, because you got to understand, like, there's just certain parts of it that like we as artists perceive ourselves a certain way and we want an audience to see us that way, but that's not necessarily how they do, you know? Like, I want someone to be like, whoa, this dude sounds like, you know, he's the next coming of Axl Rose, because, you know what, I wanted to be Axl when I grew up, but maybe someone thinks I sound like, you know, I don't know, Chino from the Deftones or something, you know, just picking stuff out of the sky right now. And so it's hard to really kind of control how you want an audience and fans of your music to like absorb you. So I've always been pretty honest with myself in that, like, you know, we needed to, every time we did a record, every time we did an EP, every time we did a single, we had to really up the game, or we didn't need to be doing it until we could figure that out. So I swallowed that pill pretty early on, because I had a developmental deal with Capitol Records when I may have been like 19 years old. So remember just all the, I learned from that big time quickly, you know, all the things that you're like, hey, the sooner you swallow these pills, the easier it'll be to go down, because that's not going to change. Even with the way the industry has changed, some things just don't, you know, a leopard never changes its spots, you know, so to speak. It's kind of like there's still the way you market has changed, but the principles are still the same in that regard, right? So learning that early on was super helpful. So just starting over was probably the scariest, because it was like, well, I'm a singer and I'm still going to sing and play guitar. So someone like Dave Grohl can go from playing drums in Nirvana to singing and playing guitar, and it's instantly different. I didn't want to be that dude that was like, I'm going to start a solo project and it's going to be all different, but yet it sounds exactly the same, you know? So it was like, for me, I had to change everything around it. You know, literally, like I said, my physical, my body, my being, I did everything opposite. I'm like, oh, we wore eyeliner and had mohawks and all black.
I'm going to wear white and let my hair grow out and not shave if I don't feel like it. Like, I don't know. You know what I mean? Because it was always like anything that I did, if all my guitars were black, I got white guitars. You know, it was if everything was in, you know, a drop A tuning and a drop B tuning, well, I'm going to go to standard and this and this and this. I mean, I did everything to be different that I possibly could within reason. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because obviously, like, you can't really, like, reinvent the wheel. But at least for myself, I had to make a really crazy attempt, you know? And I mean, some songs I would write were, like, completely left field. Was like, I don't even, like, know what I'm doing right now. And so that's part of the process that took a long time. But that was also a really fun part, because with not having an actual band and it just being me, I was able to do whatever musically needed to happen, you know? So if I needed to have a song that had a banjo and a kazoo, you know, then that's what it was going to be. I didn't have to think like, oh, I don't have a banjo kazoo player, so I can't do it, you know? Or, you know, for Murder FM, we had a certain sound and it was a stock setup and it was like you had to write for that. And so to a certain degree, you already had, you know, in place, you know, you couldn't really grow, which made it kind of difficult, you know? And that was part of it too, is I knew we had to grow. So it ended up being fun, but man, it was scary as hell, dude, you know?
And I was by myself for a lot of it,
you know? I was, you know, and I mean, I didn't know if anyone would care. And then when you're away from the business for, you know, a year or two, probably 2 years, I guess it was for me, things change, different things come in vogue, if you will. Regimes change, all the networking you had done, there's different people. I mean, it's all different. And to a certain degree, it was starting over. But which was great that for whatever reason, you know, I'm super thankful Murder FM had a name, and I was lucky enough to have a name within industry circles that people were willing to take a chance to see what I had. And since it was different, it was cool too, because it was like, all right, you know, this dude he's legitimately trying something different. So, you know, people got behind it, which was really cool. So to see it pop up on, you know, Billboard and, you know, all kinds of stuff like that has just been really crazy. Like, I'm like, wow, dude, I didn't even think I was going to get 5 streams and 2 downloads, much as I turned on Billboard, you know? So this is really awesome.
Yeah, that dude, that had been what was it, like, number one most added on Rock Mainstream when it first came out? Mirror, Mirror?
Yes. Yes, it was. And I think we're at 5 weeks now on Billboard, the Rock Top 40, which is, I mean, for a band or a project at this level, especially at this time of year, with all the heavy hitters coming out, Five Finger Death Punch, Greta Van Fleet, you know, Hailstorm, I mean, you name it, just like all the big dogs dropping records for summer and festival season. It's like, for us to even get that far and sit there is really huge, you know, like, it really says something. You know, it's really a testament to the people that are getting behind it, because it's like, we shouldn't even be there.
That's wild. Now, the one thing too that I saw that stood out, which I really love, is that you're calling the music now heart rock, because you're really writing from your heart now.
Yes, you know what, I had to put a little label on it. You know, I'm not big on all these different kinds of labels, but I was like, all right, what would make someone's ears perk up? You know, what would make you think? And I'm like, you know what, this I want to call this heart rock. One, it sounds like hard rock, so that's kind of cool. Two, it's from the heart, for the heart. It's all about songs that are dealing with matters of the heart. Three, it might filter some people out. You know, it might filter out some fans that'll say, oh, that sounds weak, dude. I don't like that. But you know what? That was something that I was very interested in doing in a certain capacity as well, as that, you know what? I wanted to have a new fan base to play for, because I wanted to have new goals and milestones of my own. I wanted to change the minds of some people that didn't initially like it and go, hey, that's pretty cool, you know? And for some people that just wouldn't be into it, it was kind of like, well, you know, I don't want to worry about people that aren't going to like it anyways. I'd really rather focus on something special for everybody that would. So it was my way of trying to kind of like set the tone for what I'm doing and really, you know, let you know, like, I set out to do something different.
Do you think this is truly the most like personal you've really gotten with writing your music?
Absolutely. Every song I've ever written started with a kernel of a truth and from a personal experience, but really quickly manifested itself into something a little more general, into a story, into, you know, drawn from, you know, friends around me and their experiences and life stuff. It was never really like directly coming from me, because I was wanting to keep it general, you know, especially I never wanted someone to think, did you write that song about me? Did you, whatever it could be, right? One, you didn't want to give them that credit and that satisfaction. Two, if you're living with that person at that time in life, also, it can be like, oh, you didn't write that song for me? Cool. So you're writing songs about other people in your life. Did you still think,
right?
You know, it's a very slippery slope, which is why it became very character driven. And it's like, hey, man, it's like I'm writing a movie with music. That's all it is, you know? So it became that. And now, I mean, it's straight up anything that I've dealt with, been with, felt. I mean, the Mirror Mary EP is just the first part of it. We have actually want to release two more EPs. We just thought maybe it'd be cooler to release them in EP format. You know, I thought sure. It would be cooler. You know, first of all, I didn't know if anyone would care. You know, so it's like, hey, let's not put the carriage before the horse, dude. You know, let's see if anyone's going to care first. And then if they are, you know, do it and drop another one. But stylistically, each one kind of has its own little theme, which was fun to do as well, because I was like, well, why confuse everybody and put an acoustic song here and an electronic song here and this and this? What if we just kind of did every EP with its own little thing, and this way kind of has something conceptually or like musically a little bit different, you know, each time. So it's kind of fresh. So every time one drops, you're like, oh, you know, it's going to be something a little different. Same vein, but a little different, and that satisfies my own, you know, creativity as well.
Yeah, you know, as a matter of fact, I was going to ask, I saw on your Facebook page a couple clips of videos you guys doing Mirror Mirror Acoustic, and I was wondering, do you guys have any plans to like record a version of that acoustically? Or
absolutely. Actually, I've got an entire, the entire Mirror Mirror EP done acoustically already. I thought that would be something kind of cool, because those songs were written on acoustic. And okay. From doing these acoustic shows, talk about vulnerability, by the way. I mean, I might as well be on stage in my underwear. you can't really hide behind a big show when you're doing acoustic stuff, which is another reason why I was like, hey, man, in the spirit of doing something different, let's do it, you know? So we started out with these acoustic shows, but I think it really lets the point of the song shine a little better. And I think it really taps into your soul and transcends, you know, to the listener a whole lot more than it does with even the big bombast of the production. So I'm like, you know what? I think this is something we need to do. So as I was rehearsing the songs, I just would record them, and I would just sit down and, you know, have a studio, and I would just set up the mics and I just track myself. And, you know, and every time I rehearsed it, I would just track it and kind of did it in a way that like, hey, I'm going to pretend that it's just you and I in a room and I'm singing this song to you. So that way, you know, that presentation that you got, you know, it wasn't completely produced, you know, maybe a sour note here and there, whatever, but it was as real deal as it could be. So that's kind of fun too. So it was another challenge for me. Like, I'm really big right now. I'm like trying to challenge myself to do new and different things, because cool. I can't expect, you know, someone listening to want to keep listening if I'm not really trying to give something new every time around, you know?
Sure. Sure. That's awesome though. Now, how about the, you mentioned you own a music school. The Sound Foundation is called?
Yes.
Now, is that kind of like an school of rock type thing, or?
Is it a rock type thing?
Is it, yeah, like a school of rock type thing?
Yeah, like school of rock. Yeah, only like we're way cooler. no, I'm actually, I'm friends with a lot of school of rock people. But it's in that vein for all intents and purposes, but really it's for those that are a lot further along or okay. want to be further along. You know, we're into the marathon runners, not the sprinters. So for us, it's about artist development, developing an artist. You know, my little boy, for example, he plays soccer and he's 5 years old, but he's got until he's 18 to figure out if he wants to play soccer full time, go for a scholarship, you know, who knows. But a lot of musicians never get that chance. You know, a lot of us
right.
didn't get to really try and pursue our musical dream until we got a, you know, student loan from college and we went and purchased a guitar and started a band instead, you know? so that's why the industry itself and people in the industry, I think, can get a bad rap when you realize there's so many career avenues in the music industry. I mean, there's over 80 career paths. I literally counted them. And we have music business classes at my school as well. We do it with all ages. So something like School of Rock, right, where they age out at 17 or 18 years old. I'm looking more for people that maybe want to start at 12 and 13 but are going to go until they're adults, or, you know, those floundering bands that are in their 20s that, you know, well, how do we get from point A to point B? We don't necessarily need a manager, but we need guidance. We need consultation. We need help. You know, that's kind of what we do there too. So we'll start them with the lessons if they don't know how to play, but we have production classes, songwriting classes, music classes. We've got some great instructors like CJ from Drowning Pool, John Kelly from Typo Negative, who also plays drums for Hookers and Blow and Danzig now. So, you know, we try to bring in some industry heavy hitters. I have clinics from, you know, any of my famous friends, you know, come down and do some stuff. So it's a really special thing I think we're doing, and I'm really proud of it. It's been around for 7 years now.
Oh, nice. Congrats, man. That's awesome, dude.
Yeah, thank you. We also do online stuff too. So anyone listening to SoundFoundationDallas.com, hit us up.
Now, let me, it's funny because I've had this, you know, I'm always in my head, and maybe you are too, you know, with the music scene, the live show music scene in the club, you know, especially here in the Philadelphia area. I'm always trying to think to myself, what the hell can be done to turn it around, to get more people to come out, to do something? And I go back to, like, I was thinking back when I was a kid, they used to have one of the rock clubs here in Philly. They would do what was called All Ages Sundays. And it would be like 6 o'clock start time, under 21, or, you know, all ages show. And they don't do stuff like that no more. And I was thinking, why? There's so many of these, you know, school of rock type places around anymore. Why aren't, like, clubs combined, you know, mixing with these school of rocks to do these all ages type shows, but open it up to one or two of the original bands in the area to have them, like, cross-promote, and so these kids can see what's going on in the scene right now?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, we do that down here in Dallas every December and every June. Actually, for my birthday in June, I have a show called Narpalooza. So I'll mix it with some local bands and some of my students and student bands or singer-songwriters. But, yeah, it's a weird thing. It's like our generation on up grew up on the live show experience, and it's something about the generation in between. Like, these younger kids, they get it because they have parents that are like my age, you know, so they've got dads that are, you know, still young and be like, you know what I mean, I'm only 30, dude, like, I'm not that old. But they're turning them on to music that we were into, right? So you'll see, like, this gap in between, and it seems like the gap in between, they'll just pull up a video on YouTube, right? And you're like, okay, cool. Well, I saw the band live, and that's kind of cool. And you're like, you have no idea. Like, sometimes it wasn't even about going to see a band. It was just about getting out of your house. You know what I mean? And, like, hanging out at a club and hearing some live music and checking out the ladies. What? You know what I mean? So some place to sneak into, you know? And it's weird how that happens. So I always, you know, I preach it to my students that haven't seen that side of it. And I get them in the show, and I'm like, man, this is so cool, and you guys have no idea, like, you know, the internet and your phone and your iPad can only do so much for you as that human element and that human experience, man. But I think that's probably, you know, a big catalyst of a lot of that. It's just there's that gap, you know, the internet. It's really cool that the internet can bring that type of stuff live into someone's living room, even with these live shows and these live streaming things that happen, which I think are awesome. But at the same time, to kind of replace sitting in a room of 100 people, 1,000 people, 10,000 people, you know, it's just, that will never be able to be replicated.
Agreed. Totally agree. So how about
we figure it out? That'd be great.
Yeah. You know what? It's funny. I'm actually, I'm meeting tomorrow night with a local band. They asked me to manage them. So I've been, like, putting together this whole, like, idea list. And that was the one thing that just popped in my head the other day. I'm like, man, I'm like, there's gotta be a cross promotion with these younger generation, because it's just not happening. There's nothing there.
Right.
So, but how about live shows with you guys? You mentioned they do some acoustic shows, but how about full-blown electric stuff?
Oh, yeah, man, it's going to start happening. I mean, the mindset at first was, let's see if there's anybody out there that cares. You know, I definitely didn't want to be the guy that was showing up to the party, not invited, you know. So there's definitely a demand for the band, which is still, like, mind-boggling to me, like, especially so early on. It's been massive. So I think probably in August, if I can recall right off the top of my head, we're going to start doing a bunch of shows, August, October, Yeah. I'm way excited about that because it gives us a little bit of time to get ready, you know, build it up, get ready for maybe even another EP drop by then. But yeah, the live shows are definitely going to be happening. But I didn't want to be presumptuous and assume that anyone would want to do it or see us. And I've, you know, dug enough ditches since I was 16 years old to know sometimes jumping in the van with a wing and a prayer and a little bit of hope just isn't going to get it done on a business side. You know, you should be on the road if there's a demand for your band. If there isn't, spend a little more time building the band before you go and do that. You know what I mean? Because it's changed so much. You know, before it used to be jump in the van, let's get a show at a really cool club, and there's going to be an audience, a built-in audience. Those days existed once, you know, but they don't so much anymore. So rather than disillusion yourself and drag your finances through the mud as well, you know, it's better to just spend the time building your band and building your brand and building your product, creating the demand for it, and then go out and hit it, because I think it makes it special for your fans too. You know, like if anyone that's latching on to us so far and, you know, early in the game and supporting us to hear that we're doing a live show, I think might actually be exciting for them after supporting us for 6 and 8 months rather than us trying to shove all these shows down their throat, you know?
Right.
And that's something that I wanted to do different as well. You know, I didn't want to beat people over the head with the music. I kind of wanted to just, you know, going back to the heart rock thing, I'm going to throw it out there, you know, and if this is something that you might dig, please get into it. If it's something that you don't think you will, well, that's cool, you know, because I wanted whoever was going to be into it to really be into it.
Absolutely.
I think it just makes it better for everybody.
I agree. I totally agree. Cool. Well, I'm loving that. I'm loving what I hear. It's cool.
Thank you so much, man.
Ballsy. And much respect for you to totally, you know, repackage, rebrand yourself and, you know, a whole new start from the heart, and, you know, a real change of direction for you, man. Dude, it takes balls. I got to give you a lot of credit, man. I would have been scared to tell you.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And thank you for backing me up. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. So where should we send everybody to go to learn more? As, you know what? No, the one question I wanted to ask too: where did the name come from? As Strange as Angels.
You know, at first I thought I was genius. You got a report card, so I'm getting my little dude from school. Hi, Victor. Hi. the name at first I thought I was genius. I'm like, Strange as Angels. Wow, that sounds so cool. And I was sitting at dinner with a friend when I realized it's a part of a Cure song. And I happen to be a huge Cure fan. I even have Robert Smith tattooed on my arm. But I didn't realize that it was from Just Like Heaven. And so I was like,
oh, wow.
This is crazy. But I thought it would be nice because it would be opposite again from anything that we had done. You know, Murder FM, you know, bands I'd been in. It was so dark and But I was like, let's do something kind of different that doesn't really give the music any sort of connotation. So that way we could also grow with the music as well, you know. If I wanted to do, again, heavier stuff, you'd be like, wow, that's a really cool contrast. If I decided to do an entire acoustic record, you know, no one would be like, oh, that's kind of weird. That doesn't fit the name. It's like, that's exactly what the project is trying to do, just be completely different.
That's cool. Cool.
Awesome,
so, all right, so plugs. So throw them out there. Where should we send everybody?
You know what? You can go to strangeasangels.com for all our merchandise, our shows coming up. Got all the social media buttons you need there. Or you can just find us on Facebook at As Strange as Angels, Instagram at As Strange as Angels. Twitter, you can't because there's some punk out there with the As Strange as Angels handle that doesn't ever use it. So it's angels underscore strange. So I'm starting a petition to get him to let go of it. We'll trade you handles, man. Let me have it.
Oh, man. Yeah, get on that. Get that Twitter.
That's right. But yeah, please do. Yeah, man, get on it. Facebook, Instagram, a website, you name it. You love it. We're still at a really cool point where I can actually have the time to be able to speak with people and, you know, talk to everyone that, like, messages us on social media, which is really cool because, you know, for Murder FM, let's say, and things got so big that it was like we became a machine, you know, which is really awesome. Right. But you couldn't actually be in touch with everybody. And we're still at that level where I'm grinding it out myself and I'm enjoying it, actually. I've embraced that and I love it.
That's cool, man. That's super cool. Well, dude, congrats with everything. Much continued success. And welcome back to the music business.
Hey, you know what? Thank you very much for having me. And thank you for
being an early believer, man, I really, really, really do appreciate it. If there's one thing having to start over has really taught me, it's appreciation for every little bit of support that anyone gives you, man. So I have to make sure that you know that. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, man. Much appreciated back at you.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, man. Take care.
You have a good one. And
you
say
too.
What's up to Philly for me. Yay, yay.
Absolutely, man. When you come out, you got to come out here and let's do some cheesesteaks, buddy.
Oh, we will. We'll do cheesesteaks, and I'll get a chant going on from the stage. EC-dub. EC-dub.
I guess you know my past then, huh?
I do my homework, too.
That's awesome. Cool. Let's do it.
And I'm a huge wrestling freak, dude, so that'd be awesome.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, man. Do it. ECW.
Awesome,
all the way.
Thank
ECW.
You. You know it. You know it.
You know, here, quick
so
funny
much,
story
man.
For you.
What's that?
I just literally signed up on the WWE Network the other night, and I have two daughters, and they never really saw any of the wrestling stuff, especially ECW stuff. And my older daughter is 21. She's really getting into the wrestling world now. And I sat and showed her November to Remember 1995. And she sat there for 2.5 hours with her mouth on the floor. She was just like, you guys were freaking nuts. You're out of your mind.
Dad, I can't believe you did this stuff.
Yeah. Like her mind was blown. She was just like, I don't know what I'm watching.
Well, I need to say that I'm a fan.
That's
so I was like, dude, this is going to be so cool. Yeah, man, I've been a wrestling freak since I was a kid. I did my homework, like I said, you know, when I was like, God, why do I know this from somewhere? And I was like, oh, man, this interview is going to be awesome. Maybe I'll interview him. But, I mean, I grew up in Texas, so it was Von Erichs in
absolutely.
Dallas. It was the Guerreros in El Paso. And I just followed it forever. I actually wrote a theme song for this wrestler. His name's TMD, and they've got a thing called Rock and Rodeo Express now, a tag team that they're trained by Gangrel and Kishi. And I wrote a theme song for them, for their promotion that they're doing. And they did a big thing out here when WrestleMania was here in Dallas at the Cowboy Stadium. And they did something the day before, and they actually brought me out to come to the ring with them, do a little spot with them. Kishi had me come in like Friday and like take bumps. He wanted to see if I really meant business or if I was just trying to have fun. And I was like, dude, I'm a wrestling nerd. You have no idea. So they were just having fun, just throwing me around, you know, potatoing my ass, like seeing if I was going to show up the next day. And I did, you know, and so they got me in the ring. They got me in a little spot, you know, and it was super cool, man. But it was just like, I am a wrestling fanatic. So I got to say, for me to you, I'm a fan, dude. So thank you.
That's
bro.
Awesome. That's funny.
My, some autograph stuff.
My best friend is actually one of the trainers at Gangrel's wrestling school down in Florida.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. That's funny.
Yeah, see, my dude is Joey, TMD. See, so we're connected, man. We have a wrestling podcast now.
Hey, let's do it.
That'd be
I just
awesome,
did man. Guys too, man, on Facebook, so.
Yes. Awesome, man. This is so killer, dude. You made my day.
Back at you, bro. Back at you, man. It was great talking to you.
You too, man. Anytime.
Take
Let's
care.
Do it. Let's tear it up. Thank
All
you.
All right. Later.
All right. Bye-bye.
Reaching for a sign, I have to realign. Every time I try, I fall, stall behind. Passing through constellations, I'm drifting out of sight. Captivated by the luminance and just a satellite. Blinded by reflected all alone, a passenger who struggles for control.
Tutanuri Obey Ragney here, and there he is, Norman Matthew. Make sure you check them out. Show them some love. That was the single Mirror Mirror. And you can go right to the website. It's got the, you know, it's like the central hub for all the socials. Go to asstrangeasangels.com and, you know, up in the corner, just look. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. Do it all. Like them, love them, follow them, and show them some Totally Driven love. So there you go. There's tonight's show. I'm actually out at a comedy show in downtown Philly, so I'm getting my ha-has and laughs on. So, and believe me, I truly do need them. So thanks for tuning in tonight, and you know, share this out. Share it with all your peeps. Share it with all your friends, your neighbors, your family. Share it with everybody. Make the world a totally driven place. And make sure you like, love, follow us, and subscribe to us as everywhere as well. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, you know, we're freaking everywhere. So do it. And most importantly, make sure you, like, listen to these words I'm about to tell you and make sure you do it. Stay driven. See you, everybody.